Okay, so we're talking today about child development and the sort of knowledge that social workers need to bear in mind when they're planning for children of different ages. And Jill, why would you say a social worker's knowledge of child development is so important for planning?
Well, I think at the heart of planning is a process of assessment and prediction of the likely future developmental trajectory for the child. So understanding the child's past and present across the full range of development allows a social worker to make a professional judgment about the outcomes of different decisions for the child's well-being right through to adulthood. And so there are therefore important child development questions for social workers to take into account at the threshold of care, and in care, and of course in adoption. So whether the focus of planning is on ensuring that the current caregivers are able to meet the child's needs, perhaps with help, or whether the focus is on planning for a child's future move to new permanent caregivers.
And what are the key principles that social workers need to keep in mind when they're thinking about development in relation to both assessment and to planning?
I suppose first it's important to stress that although the focus is on the child, it is the social worker's knowledge of child development and parenting capacity that counts. So it's essential to see the quality of the infant or child's development and the quality of caregiving, that's past, present and future, as inextricably linked. So the availability and sensitivity of the caregiver, for example, will be having an impact on the child, but the child's capacity to respond and to thrive will also be having an impact on the caregiving. So, for example, insensitive and neglectful caregiving may lead to children becoming more demanding, perhaps hyperactive, which in turn will make the parents even more likely to struggle and maybe go on to reject the child.
And what aspects of development and caregiving would you say are particularly important?
Well, when we talk about the social worker's knowledge of the different dimensions of child development, it is helpful to link these to the different dimensions of caregiving when planning for permanence. And in particular, social workers need to be knowledgeable not only about, say, physical health and development, but particularly about emotional development and attachment in the context of relationships. And I think this is the area that social workers are often best placed to assess, and it's probably likely to be their major contribution to multidisciplinary assessments. So at UEA we've been working on this, and we've been developing an attachment and resilience-based model of caregiving and child development, called the Secure Base Model, in which five dimensions of developmental needs are identified, and each is linked to a particular area of caregiving. And these dimensions are all important in assessment and planning, so if I just go through them. So the first is the child's ability to trust in the emotional and physical availability of the parent or the carer. Second is very important to development, the ability to manage feelings and behaviour. And this can only develop in the context of sensitive and responsive caregiving. Thirdly, the child's self-esteem, which I think most people understand is very significant for all areas of the child's well-being. And this develops when a caregiver loves and accepts the child unconditionally. Fourthly, the ability to feel effective and be cooperative. And for this dimension, caregivers need to support the child's growing sense of autonomy and to work with the child to solve problems rather than getting into conflict and challenges. And finally, but very importantly, all children need to feel they belong in a family that supports them through childhood into adulthood. And of course, this is really the goal of permanence. And these dimensions interact all the time, so whether you're working with the child or the caregiver, you need to think about the way in which the child needs to feel that they're valued and accepted, for example, in order to feel part of the family.
And do you think that social workers should be or can be experts on all aspects of development?
I think this is a very difficult question, really. Social workers do need to be experts in assessing the impact of parenting and family relationships on the child's development. However, they will need to be aware of the limits of their expertise and when other professionals need to contribute to the assessment and planning. So the potential significance of key developmental factors such as an infant's weight or a toddler's language delay must be known to a social worker. But to define the seriousness and the likely outcome of a particular developmental difficulty requires a social worker to call on other professionals such as a health visitor or a speech therapist, and to then incorporate those views. So it is important for the social worker to be clear about their areas of expertise and to defend those, but also to be energetic and active in seeking out the relevant views of other experts in the field.
Mm, yeah. Okay, so could we look at specific age groups now and think about the most important elements in child development that social workers need to be aware of? And let's start with babies. What would you say is particularly important for babies in their first year of life?
Well, there are several key issues that form the basis of thinking about the infant's development and the impact of the caregiving environment on that development. And I think the first is the fact that infants are already complex human beings at birth, really, with some basic characteristics that they share with other infants, such as the need for food and relationships, but many individual differences in terms of feeding patterns, responsiveness, sociability, levels of physical activity, and so on. Some of these differences will be genetic, and others will be the result of the pre-birth environment, which, unfortunately for many of the children about whom children social workers are concerned, may well have been affected by drugs, alcohol, or poor nutrition. So at birth, these babies may already be compromised in different ways. And of course, then the infants, these characteristics at birth, will very rapidly start to interact with the quality of the caregiving, so that failure to gain weight, even by 2 weeks old, may already be a result of a number of factors in the infant, in the caregiver, and in the caregiver's own relationship environment, such as, a context of domestic violence. And this brings us to a very important point that social workers need to be aware of in infancy, that although physical development and emotional development have to be considered separately in any assessment, it's often the links between physical and emotional development that need to be most clearly taken into account. Does the infant have a secure base emotionally in order to support the capacity to thrive, you know, physically?
Mm. And what should social workers be looking for, particularly in the caregiving relationship?
Well, all infants need an available and responsive parent or caregiver, one who's able to keep the child in mind and to tune into the infant's physical and emotional needs and communications. So where infants are failing to gain weight with no clear physical reason, or failing to become responsive to adults in the way that's expected, then social workers need to think about the quality of the attachment relationship that should be developing with the parent. And this needs to be observed very carefully and understood. So we need to remember that although clear-cut selective attachments are said to have formed by the age of 6 to 7 months, formation of attachment really begins at birth, with babies able to discriminate between their mother and other adults within days of birth. So you just always need to remember these early weeks, they're crucial to development, as the longer the infant is exposed to insensitive and perhaps even frightening care, the more damaging it is to both their physical and emotional development. And of course, I mean, it's going to take longer for new caregivers to be able to restore the child's health and their potential for growth and happiness. So these are very significant periods of time in which important judgments need to be made. And when an infant from that kind of difficult background comes into care following neglect or abuse, they will then need highly sensitive and continuous caregiving from the foster carer in order to establish relaxed rhythms of eating and sleeping. And of course, contact arrangements do need to take this into account. So this opportunity, though, for the infant to settle and to achieve physical and relationship developmental milestones will in the long run be of benefit whether the infant returns home or is placed with relatives, perhaps a grandparent, or indeed moves into an adoptive family.
Yes. Mm. And how do children's needs change during the toddler and preschool years?
Well, this is a very exciting age period for children. It certainly should be. It's a time when children start to become more mobile, to actively engage with the world of play and to develop language. And there will be many developmental signs as to whether the tasks of infancy have been accomplished and therefore whether a child is actually able to take advantage of the new opportunities that this stage offers. And where young children are still preoccupied perhaps with meeting their physical or emotional needs, perhaps because they were unmet in the birth family during infancy, their behaviour may be chaotic and demanding and really quite difficult for carers and adoptive parents to manage. So I think we should never underestimate how difficult even a young toddler can be. So planning for permanence for children of this age must take into account how well the young child has coped with the task of infancy. And it's helpful for the social worker to focus on the secure-based dimensions. In particular, you know, how able is this 2 or 3-year-old to trust adults to provide comfort and also support for play and exploration? How able are they to regulate their emotions and take into account the feelings of others? This is a key challenge for this age period. Most children by the age of 4 are able to start to think about other people's thoughts and feelings, and of course this is key to managing not only their relationships with their parents and with their brothers and sisters, but also their peer group relationships. And we're anticipating the need for them to be able to manage really quite complex relationships, such as those with teachers as they enter school.
And how can social workers use this knowledge of child development to support caregivers of children at this age?
Well, I think when we're thinking about plans for children of this age, they must include assessments that not only help with matching, which is very important, but also that provide a strong case for support for the child, the carers, and the placement. It seems to me that tackling emotional and behavioural problems in children of this age is absolutely crucial. Whether a 3-year-old child is in foster care, maybe awaiting an adoption placement, or in the early stages of an adoption placement. This requires getting a child emotionally and socially ready for school and ready to learn, so that they can make a good start and can begin an upward spiral of developmental success and happiness. So I do see this period of time as being a real window of opportunity. And if a child by the age of 4 or 5 is still struggling with significant difficulties from experiences in their birth family in infancy, then they will really be quite significantly disadvantaged. And hoping that a child will settle into a new placement and be ready for school may just not be enough. So again, the secure-based model focuses on quite active approaches to parenting that can be therapeutic. Important to remember with the whole concept of a secure base that it has benefits not only for attachment, but also for the child's ability to cope with the quite challenging demands of the classroom and the playground.
Yes, and I guess those peer group and school-related issues continue into middle childhood.
Yes, it's interesting. This is a period of time which Freud called latency, which is actually seen as maybe a quiet period developmentally, and yet these children have some absolutely crucial and important developmental tasks to manage. Although as preschoolers they may have become able to manage their feelings and behaviour to some degree and to seek help when they need it, in this age period they are needing to spend much more time in environments where they really have to adapt to other people, to other children, to adults. They have to accept and adapt to the expectations of the classroom, for example, expectations that they'll sit still, that they'll learn, and also they're going to be judged against certain standards, both behaviour and academic performance. In the playground too, fitting in also requires certain kinds of confidence and competence. So for this age group, the secure-based dimensions of perhaps self-esteem and self-efficacy and cooperation are particularly important. And I would suggest that carers and adopters often need to offer really very focused support for children of this age who are so likely to struggle with self-esteem and will be finding cooperation difficult. So caregivers and doctors, carers, and in teachers as well, will need to identify areas of activity where the child can feel successful. They'll need to orchestrate that success sometimes by being available to stand on the touchline or help at Brownies. But here again, social workers' understanding of the child's developmental needs at this age does need to be matched by some very concrete ideas about the parenting that will be required really to help the child compensate for early gaps in their development. So I think it's really important that when we think about child development knowledge and planning, we're also thinking about the kind of active support and guidance that will then follow on from the successful plan, or will indeed make the plan successful. Mm. I must just add that also we need to bear in mind that where children have disabilities, it will be especially important to identify ways of building the child's sense of competence and mastery, as well as enabling the child to feel good about him or herself and managing the setbacks and failures that are often part of all children's experience at some stage, but these may be particularly painful for children who've just not had good early experiences.
Mm, yes. And then when children move into adolescence, there are often anxieties amongst social workers or foster carers and adopters, a sort of feeling that problems could get worse. Is this always the case, do you think?
Well, adolescence is an important period of transition, obviously, and although it's often seen as problematic, actually it can also be an excellent opportunity to change children's lives for the better. That in adolescence, children's thinking is becoming more complex, and particularly for older teenagers, there may be times when they actually start to appreciate the stability of the care that they've had in foster care and adoption, even though this may renew sadness that their birth family was not able to care for them and keep them safe. So it's not always the case at all that problems continue to get worse. There is definitely a need to maintain that idea that actually, even in adolescence, behaviour and attitudes and approaches to life can change quite radically. So, nevertheless, we have to recognise that for many young people, including young people in foster care and adoption, early adolescence particularly can be a period in which self-esteem might be uncertain and demands of peer group and families might be in conflict. But so it's very important to bear in mind that for most young people, there is also a strong sense of wanting to be valued by the parent figures in their lives and to feel that they have the support of a family. So it's often difficult when children appear to be rejecting the family to hold on to that hope and belief. But actually, nevertheless, it is the case. Most young people want to be loved and looked after in their families.
Hmm. And how would you say could child development knowledge help in managing adolescent placements that are at risk or have ended?
Well, it's important to bear in mind that the anticipation of demands of adult life will add anxiety to any adolescent experience, and also add anxiety to the caregiver's experience of parenting an adolescent. So it's very important for the social worker to be able to assess the strengths and difficulties in the family. Secure-based model offers some ideas about how strengths as well as problems can be identified and worked with positively, including the possibility, and I think we do have to bear in mind that this may be the outcome, of offering support and ongoing family membership to the young person even where a placement ends. So I think there are particular tasks around identity building and separation in adolescence that all adolescents face, but clearly, children who've grown up in foster care or adoption will have additional tasks, and those may well need very particular kinds of additional support. But our research on planning for children in adolescence, where placements have ended, does suggest that valuing attachment and family membership can lead to the building of new relationships for young people in permanent families. And these families may be identified even when young children are teenagers. So I think it's really important to, although some teenagers may end up in residential care and that might be exactly the right place for them, there will be many teenagers, even 15, 16, 17-year-olds, for whom a new family life can be the way to prepare them and support them to adulthood. Doors should always be kept open, of course, so that young people can value what may have been successful in their previous foster and adoptive families. They may stay in touch when placements have ended, or, and this is quite a common pattern we find, that they make contact again in adulthood.
Hmm. So, to sum up, Jill, what would be your key message for social workers about the value of child development knowledge?
I guess it's about using good evidence about child development to both understand the concerns about a child and intervene to support children in placements, but also to remain positive and hopeful. Children's capacity to overcome adversity in the context of loving family relationships that promote the child's development can be truly remarkable. And we find many children from difficult backgrounds who do go on to successful and stable adult lives. And I think it's really important when we hear the difficulties that some children have had early in life that we hang on to this possibility for change and this hope.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.